This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the New Books Network. This is your host, Shu Wan. Today, I feel very happy to introduce Dr. Deng's newest book, Chinese Espresso. So the first thing I want to do today is still to invite Dr. Deng to introduce herself to us.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gracia Deng, and I am a social cultural anthropologist. I'm currently a European Commission Mercury Fellow at the University of Venice, Ca' Foscari. Before that, I was a postdoc at Brown University's Population Studies and Training Center. I received my PhD degree in anthropology at the Chinese University of Hong Kong, and I will be joining Brandeis University Department of Anthropology as a full-time lecturer this fall.
Oh, thanks so much for your answer. So the next question I want to ask is that I'm wondering why you are taking interest in the fantastic topic of Chinese on the coffee shop in Italy?
Yeah, that's a good question. So before becoming an anthropologist, I was actually an Italianist. I was teaching Italian language and culture in Shanghai. And when I decided to do a PhD degree in anthropology in particular, I wanted to do something that can connect China and Italy. And I have been always interested in social interactions between people from very different backgrounds, like national backgrounds, cultural backgrounds, and racial backgrounds. So when I, by chance, I got to know that many Chinese immigrants in Italy have been managing and taking over local coffee bars in Italy, I was very shocked. I was like, that was very different from my own experiences studying and living in Italy, because the Chinese immigrants at that point, when I was first in Italy, was first time in Italy was like 2004, 2005. And at that point, the Chinese immigrants in Italy, in my mind, in my understanding, were quite marginalized and quite invisible in urban space. But at the same time, the coffee bars in Italy were kind of at the center of the urban local culture. So I could not connect, the two things together, Chinese immigrants and the local coffee culture in Italy. So when I got to know by chance that Chinese immigrants are managing coffee bars, I was like, okay, this is my project. I really wanted to discover more about what's behind, the new phenomenon of Chinese running coffee bars in Italy.
Okay, thanks so much for your answer. So now let's turn to your book. So my first question for your book is that I want to invite you to talk about availability of feminine labor, comparative ideologies of work, as transformative aspiration and other economic and non-economic factors that contribute to the transfer of ownership from Italian to Chinese in this very niche macro enterprise?
Yeah, of course. I think one thing that I should talk about is that so the coffee bars or coffee houses in Italy are quite different from, for example, the Starbucks and other transnational coffee house chains, because in Italy, probably if you go there, you will see probably most of the coffee bars are kind of a small independent coffee bars managed by a family. So it's basically a small family business. So it's, and usually they hire or even do not hire, extra labor. So it's primarily dependent on the family labor. So I'm not talking about the coffee houses located in the city centers, where a bar owner can hire even like 20 baristas or employees. I'm talking about locally based neighborhood coffee bars, kind of the so-called like traditional coffee bars in Italy. These traditional coffee bars are usually family run and family managed. They are very dependent on the family labor. And then these kind of coffee bars become very popular since the 1960s, especially when like many rural and migrants from southern Italy, moved to the cities. And then the small coffee bar became, one of the first small businesses that they could get access to. So usually it's a family, husband and a wife, they run their small family business. And then until now, so many Italian coffee bar owners, they are becoming, really too old to follow the business. So many of them have already reached the age of retirement. Their children usually got better education. They went to college and then they didn't want to stay in the family business. So what can they do? So either they just terminate the business or they sell the business. So who can they sell the business to? Usually immigrants, because the new immigrants, they probably face similar situations as the same as that of the situation for the internal migrants in the 1960s, 1970s. And then in the case of Chinese immigrants, so most of my Chinese interlocutors, also coffee bar owners, had been living in Italy for at least 10 years or 15 years. And then they had accumulated some kind of economic capital and then social capital and language skills. At the same time, their children are growing up and became important family labor. And they could contribute to the family business. They came of age and then they, also needed to do something. Not all of them had the chance to go to college and to enter the mainstream labor market. And what could they do? Just stay in the family business, So this is one thing. So the availability of family labor, is different for the Chinese and for the, local Italians. Another thing that I noticed is their understanding of time. So in Italy, to run a coffee bar, usually it takes like 10 hours or 12 hours per day. So if you do not have enough labor, so, the owners had to, the self-employed owners had to follow the business by themselves to stay behind the coffee bar counter for 10 hours, for 12 hours. And for many local Italians, especially the younger generation who did not want to, you know, stay in the family business, they found, you know, this is the like 10 to 12 hours are just too long. And then very often they have to keep the bar open for 7 days per week, right? Basically every day. So, but they wanted a more balanced lifestyle. They wanted to go to the holidays, spend more time with family. Yeah, they want more leisure time. This is many previous coffee bar owners or their family members told me. At the same time, for many Chinese coffee bar owners, running a coffee bar is already kind of a upward mobility, because some of them told me that, you know, staying behind in a coffee bar for 10 to 12 hours is still better than, you know, working in the factory, in the manufacturing workshop for 10 hours, 12 hours, because the coffee bar is basically, you know, in the city, and they could still enjoy the urban life rather than, you know, limiting themselves in the very, you know, isolated workshop to make clothes, right? So for them, you know, the working hours is not a huge issue. And some of them just told me that, yeah, but any jobs available for us are basically the same. They all need like 10 hours, 12 hours. So it's not about the long hours. They don't think that's a problem. Also, some of them told me that, you know, working as a barista in a bar, so it's not that intense. So when the customers here, we have to serve them. But when they're not there, so I can just, you know, play on my smartphone, you know, so even like watch videos and play video games there. Yeah, so they don't think that staying behind the bar counter means that they are always working. So here is a different understanding of what means leisure and what means working. Yeah. And another factor that I wanted to talk about is the family structure. So the most of the Chinese coffee bar owners are Chinese immigrants from Wenzhou area, many with rural backgrounds. So I noticed that they have a very much like a patriarchal family structure, and both the parents and the children often highlight the family duty. So they have to contribute to the family, and it's their duty to contribute to make their immigrant life, you know, to live a good life as immigrants in Italy. So yeah, so their children often, you know, start helping their family business since they are teenagers. Yeah, so basically the second generation, the children of Chinese immigrants also speak better Italian, have better, you know, social skills and cultural competence. So they could even become the major labor, family labor in these very niche micro enterprises run by their family. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks so much for your answer. Then for the next question, I'm wondering what you talk about Chinese entrepreneurs, how they categorize coffee bar and still it themselves in their variegated socialities, which are often marked by something like social class.
So first of all, I would like to say that it's almost impossible to categorize coffee bars in Italy, because there are just too many categories. And then, you know, there are coffee bars located in the city centers. There are also coffee bars located in, you know, peripheries. There are bars focusing on breakfast, lunches, drinks, coffees, or even slot machines. So another difference between the Italian coffee bars and the, you know, the coffee bar chains like Starbucks is that Italy's coffee bars are basically a combination of many things, of a coffee house, of a cafe, of a bar, like focusing on alcoholic drinks, and sometimes also a game room or the community center. Okay, so it's really quite difficult to categorize all these coffee bars. But for the Chinese immigrants and the Chinese entrepreneurs there, they have their own ways to name them, to categorize them. But still there are different ways to categorize. For example, by clients, right? So some bars for them are coffee bars for elderlies, the pensioners, you know. So it means that it's a bar that has a very stable clientele. So they only need to focus on pleasing or, you know, catering to these stable clients. There are also bars, coffee bars for passersby, as they say. So this means that the clients are not stable, okay? And then some of them who can speak better Italian, you know, they can run a coffee bar, as they say, a bar where you need to communicate with your customers. And some of the bars are focusing on immigrants. So they say, okay, we don't this is kind of a bar that we do not need to communicate that much with the clients because they have their own social groups. They just hang out there. We just offer a space for them. So in my book, I talked a lot about you know, how their understandings are marked by social class. In this case, I mean that so to run what kind of a bar is dependent on many factors. For example, how much money do they have? Because a bar located in the city center and a bar located in the periphery, it can be very different, right? So the first of all, it depends on, you know, their economic capital. So how much money they have. It also depends on, you know, the language skills they have, you know. If a family has the two generations running a bar, it's like the first generation immigrants and the who do not speak very well Italian, but their children who can speak very good Italian because they grew up in Italy, right? So they probably can run a business that needs more language skills to communicate with customers. But if a family who does not have enough language skills, they could run a very marginal coffee bars, because they could just focus on providing very basic services without that much communications with the clients. So what kind of a bar they can they run is very much related to the social class of the Chinese immigrants in the Italian, you know, in Italian society. So how long they have moved to Italy and how much economic, social, and cultural capital they have. But I mean, this is all a process. I know many coffee bar owners, they started with a very marginal bar, but with more experiences and local knowledge they have, they move up to run the, you know, middle class oriented coffee bars. Yeah. So it's a process, as I said. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks so much again for your answer. So for next question, I'm wondering about, Chinese baristas, their emotional labor as they struggle with, inequality and all type of stereotypes and misunderstanding, while they attempt to convey hospitality in the quest for convivial space.
Yeah, so my Chinese interlocutors, they are very aware of their identity as a foreigner and a cultural outsider. So, and they also understand that running a coffee bar is not just selling coffee or making drinks for their customers, but it's very important in general to develop a good relationship with their customers and make friends with them, socialize with them, talk to them, right? So how do they do that? So in each coffee bar, I would say it's a kind of a speech community. So they, and the Chinese baristas usually try to include themselves in that kind of a speech community. As I mentioned earlier, that many coffee bars that Chinese immigrants are interested in are those bars with quite stable clientele. So that means that when they buy the coffee bars, they already have a stable clientele. And then what changed is just the management. So it's from Italian and moved to the Chinese ownership and the management. But this, you know, the clientele, it's already there. So they basically it's something that they, you know, take over. So not just the bar itself, but also the clientele. So, and then that also means that a small community is already shaped before they, you know, took over the bar. And then, so when they take over the bar, so they try to include themselves into that already established community. And then very often, you know, they try to include them in that, speech community by, you know, giving themselves a Italian name. So sometimes they even, you know, ask their clients to help them find a good Italian name. And then they try their best at least to communicate with their customers. They told me that smile is very important. The small talks are very important. And then if it's kind of a regular customer, and then it's important to construct or build up some kind of a neighborly, the relationship to show their neighborly hospitality. And I also noticed that some customers, you know, even become some kind of a fictive kings. You know, I know some Chinese young Chinese baristas, they call some customers as grandfather, grandpa. Okay. Oh, uncle, you know, to show their intimacy, right? The closeness. And then very often they also give the petty gains to their customers, the leftover bread or the free drink or whatever, you know, that makes their customers happy. And then in their interactions with customers, I also noticed that gender is an important factor. So I saw the very gendered sociability that the Chinese baristas use when they interact with the local customers. So Chinese coffee bar owners, they are aware that actually very often their customers were composed of a man, you know, just like very often, you know, there is male customers who are their major, you know, customers. And then in this sense, they notice that, okay, maybe it's a good idea to make sure that there is always a female barista to serve the male customers. And the very often, you know, the Italian customers have, orientalized understanding of, you know, of Chinese woman, right? So they appreciate oriental, you know, those kind of oriental, in their own words, oriental femininity, but so they don't appreciate as much, you know, the male sociability of the Chinese baristas. So the gender is a card they play a lot. And then so the Chinese male baristas, you know, they know that they have this kind of agenda disadvantage. So they have their other strategies, you know, for example, to show their generosity, the petty gains that I mentioned earlier. And I noticed that the male Chinese baristas use this kind of the generosity and petty gains much more than the female Chinese baristas use. Yeah. And then sometimes the Chinese identity also became a strategy, you know, that they try to avoid some kind of embarrassing moments, for example, the gender harassment. So because, you know, most of the customers are male, you know, are men, and then, you know, in the, as in all the other service sectors, you know, the gender harassment it's very common in the service sector. And then, the Chinese female baristas, they have their own ways to deal with that kind of embarrassing situations. For example, so once when I was in the bar, I saw a man, a client who was kind of floating with a young Chinese barista, a young woman. And then he said something really, really, you know, not good. embarrassing. And then I saw the barista was just ignored what he said and pretended that she could not understand what he says. And then when I was trying to, you know, I also learned to be a barista and, stayed in the Chinese bars for several months, learning how to become a barista, I also encountered very similar situations. Every single time when I encounter that kind of a linguistic, harassment, right? So I was just I just pretend I don't understand because I'm Chinese and it's logical that I don't understand, right? I found that this is a common strategy that not just me, but many, many other, you know, Chinese female baristas use, you know, as an evasive strategy to deal with those kind of embarrassing moments. So back to the question that you raise up. So there are, you know, this kind of a gender inequality, and then, you know, the cultural essentialism and the stereotypes on Chinese and the misunderstanding, a lot of things, you know, the structural inequalities. And then Chinese baristas, they strategically use all these things that, in their favor, you know, to try to construct a convivial space in their own favor. You know, of course, they, you know, do not appreciate, many of them do not appreciate, you know, the harassment and then the misunderstanding or even stereotypes on Chinese. But at the same time, they found a way to make a compromise for their own benefits. Yeah, so this is their subjectivity and the agency in their everyday social interactions with, different customers. Yeah.
Thanks so much for your answer again. So for the last question today, I want to invite you to talk about Chinese baristas' racial formation within and beyond the convivial coffee bar community, as well as the limits of the conviviality.
So until now, I haven't mentioned one fact, which is the coffee bars in Italy are no longer just a place where local Italians, where Italians go, but also a social place for immigrants from different national and cultural backgrounds. So Italy has become the immigrant country nowadays. They host immigrants from many different parts of the world. For example, North Africa, Eastern Europe, South Asian, and East Asian, including Chinese, right, including China. So when a Chinese family run a coffee bar, they do not only deal with the local Italians, but also many other you know, immigrants from different backgrounds, especially men. For example, so we don't like, I didn't see many women showing up in the coffee bars. I mean, like immigrant women showing up in the coffee bars. But really, there were a lot of like North African immigrants, South Asian immigrants, and Eastern Europeans. And then, so the Chinese baristas, as I mentioned earlier, many of them were from Wenzhou area and with rural backgrounds. And then they did not really have a broad understanding about where is this country located, where is that country located. You know, they don't really know about you know, the world geography and you know, the racial compositions, right? But they could see, you know, very simply, you know, who are Chinese, who are foreigners, right? And so they have their own ways to categorize non-Chinese people. And then they draw their own color lines. They call the white Italians as Lao Wai, means foreigners. They call the sub-Saharans, Africans, as Hei Ren, as black people. That's obvious. But there are people in between that could not that they could not categorize. For example, South Asians, North Africans. And for them, these people are categorized as ban hei, half black, which is a word that I never heard about when I was in China. I grew up in China and I never heard about that word. It's a completely new vocabulary that I learned when I was doing my fieldwork in Italy. And then they also very aware that, you know, so other immigrants are discriminated against in Italy. So Lao Wai means that they have, Lao Wai has power, the local Italians has power, the coffee bars are the Italian culture, and the black people in their own words, Hei Ren, means that they are poor. And then the Ban Hei, you know, the black, half blacks in their own understandings, is very similar to another Italian word, which is extracomunitari, means outside of the community. Usually a people of color. And then in Italy, people from North Africa especially have a quite a bad reputation. It's very often connected to the crime and you know, the problems, right? The social problems. And then the Chinese immigrants are very aware of this bad reputations. Even they, you know, they understand that, you know, themselves are also immigrants, but they still, you know, draw very clear lines between themselves and the other immigrants. You know, they connect, as I mentioned, so they often think that the black people, Hei Ren, are poor, but they often think that the half black people from North Africans are, you know, criminals. And this kind of anti-blackness and anti-brownness is kind of in line with the existing racial hierarchy in Italy, you know. So as I mentioned, the word extracomunitari is a kind of a racialized label that, you know, people who fall into this category in Italy are very much discriminated, including Chinese immigrants. And then the Chinese baristas, they are very aware that they are foreigners in this country. They are running a business which is not about their own culture, because usually the Chinese run Chinese restaurants and other, you know, things that's you know, more connected to their Chinese identity, but not coffee bars. They know that, you know, even in the stereotypical way that the coffee bars are the Lao Wai culture, or the, you know, the Italian culture. But they also know that the other immigrants, especially Ban Hei, half black immigrants in their own words, are an important source of clientele. You know, they have to deal with them, but they are also very vulnerable and precarious in Italy because they are immigrants, right? If they, someone told me that, for example, if the local Italian customers saw a lot of immigrants in the bar, they would refuse to, you know, to stay there, but they cannot really refuse the immigrant customers because, you know, that's a part of their business. So they have to find a way to deal with the, you know, complicated racial dynamics and the, you know, relationship between the local Italians and other immigrants in the specific coffee bar space. And so the conviviality, you know, the convivial space that they try to construct is very limited to the coffee bar space, right? And when they step out from the coffee bar space, the Chinese baristas and their families usually have very limited interactions with either white or other immigrants. So I would say that the conviviality is highly specialized and contingent, because once they sell the business, they no longer keep that kind of relationship, that they, a good relationship they constructed in that specific coffee bar space that they manage. Yeah.
Thank you so much for your answer again. So at the end of our episode today, I want to directly to touch on our audience. So my dear audience, thanks so much to listening to listen to Dr. Deng's introduction and discussion of her fantastic book. I want to repeat, I'll say the title, Chinese Espresso. It's a fantastic book. If you take any interest in either like a Chinese ethnic business, Chinese immigrants ethnic business in Italy, or you just like me, you're a coffee freak, you want to learn much more about history and the history of coffee in Italy, in Europe, or you just want to find the interesting book about coffee or about Chinese immigrants, today, I highly recommend to consider buy a copy of this fantastic book. I want to repeat the title, Chinese Espresso, and read it carefully during a weekend, the weekend, or when you feel convenient. Because this is a fantastic book, you must learn a lot of this very interesting phenomenon about Chinese immigrants owned coffee bars in Italy. Actually, before reading this book, I have never heard about that. So many Chinese owned coffee bars in Italy, not in China. So again, if you take interest in this topic, as I mentioned, Chinese coffee bars in Italy, I suggest you, like me, you can grab a cup of coffee and read a fantastic book in the weekends, on weekends, or in afternoon when you feel free. It's a fantastic book. You must learn some interesting, you must take a lot of insight from Dr. Deng's fantastic, anthropological research layer. So thanks so much for listening to our episode today. Have a good time. Thank you.